Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, or at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. I was so sad I couldn't do a show on Friday. And Matt, you too. I know it was a mixture of the working out of my house here. And so there was just an incessant construction banging for like 8 hours. So couldn't record. Matt, I know you were battling a cold as well. I was feeling under the weather as well. But I'm glad we're back here to talk about Bulls basketball. And we got three games to talk about. So how you doing, though?
Doing all right, man. Feeling pretty good about this little tank win streak we got going on right now. Four in a row after the All-Star break. And it's still going to be an uphill battle because I noticed the Mavs did pull out a win last night. We didn't get the one specific tank win helper that would have been great, which was the fact that the Phoenix Suns were right there hanging with the New Orleans Pelicans late last night. But the Pels end up winning that one. And that was the Pelicans' sixth straight win. And, of course, remember, the Bulls got that extra first-round pick for Nico in that trade. So Bulls fans want that Pelicans pick to be as high up as possible, maybe even into the lottery, and obviously are also hoping to see the Suns string a few more wins together because they are ahead of the Bulls in that tankathon race right now. So that one would have been really nice. But, I mean, in a night, at least as far as last night's game, when you saw Lauri Markkanen kind of bounce out of his recent slump and Chris Dunn had himself a nice night. It's good to see the young, important core pieces play well in a game that the Bulls lose.
Yeah, so we got a lot to talk about here, and I want to dive into those three games that we're talking about, specifically the 76ers game, just to kind of touch on that from Thursday night and then into the weekend where we saw Timberwolves team and then the Nets last night. I want to touch on all of that. We have This Week in Bulls History coming up. Remember, we have a part two of this episode coming out later today. So you're listening to this. We're going to have an interview with Chris Bleck on that second episode because we missed yesterday. So we're giving you kind of a double dose here of Locked On Bulls. But to start out, Matt, I want to talk about the 76ers loss because I was laughing so hard when this game was going on. You know, we had the big conversation about how the lineups were going to switch and how the Bulls were going to put out those guys no matter what the product exactly was. They were going to sit Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, and we were finally going to see Cristiano Felicio and guys like Cameron Payne get some run. And, man, outside of the first 6 minutes of that first quarter where the Bulls were down 22-7 at one point, and then they fought all the way back, played really good basketball for about 38, 42 minutes there. And then the last 30 seconds, Denzel Valentine, not so smart play, inbound ball, helped the tank in terms of getting losses. But I thought the fight that the Bulls put up against that 76ers team with a lot of this new shape and new offense, and you can say thank you to Bobby Portis as well. But what do you think about that 76ers game overall, just coming off of everything that we heard from the front office and the new direction that they were going to go coming after the All-Star break?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly enjoyed watching that Sixers game because it's just fun to watch that rising star duo they have of Embiid and Simmons. Those two have played very well every time the Bulls have played them this season. And you look, they both had double-doubles in that one. Embiid 30 and 13, Simmons 32 and 11 assists. So they combined for 62. Another dominant performance from those two. And it's nice to see that the Bulls were able to play them evenly. And as you mentioned, I mean, Denzel with that awful play on that inbounds pass, the Bulls, you know, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory in that one. So it's, you know, yeah, okay, great. It's a loss. The Bulls could use losses right now as we're in the home stretch. But that sort of goes back to a conversation we had earlier this season, particularly in that 10-game losing streak that preceded the 7-game win streak, about closing out games. And there are still questions about who exactly are supposed to be the closers or who is the closer on this team. Obviously, we saw Zach LaVine do it in that great upset victory against Minnesota a couple weeks ago, but there still hasn't really been any consistencies on that front. So, I mean, LaVine did have himself a decent night with 23, the leading scorer from the Bulls starting five in that first game with the new starting lineup. I mean, we could talk about his performance in this game. We could talk about his performance in this stretch of three games. But Cristiano Felicio, man, 5 points in 12 minutes, a minus 20 in 12 minutes against Philly, and his plus minus in a similar amount of minutes have been equally bad in their two games since then.
Yeah, it's not looking exactly good for Cristiano Felicio. Just real quick, just to touch on Bobby Portis too in that 76ers game.
Loved Bobby in that Sixers game.
Man, was he feeling himself. And you know what? For everything that he's been through, not only this season but last season with the whole foot thing and feeling out of place and maybe putting too much pressure on himself, and then the whole Nico fight happens, and then just for him to kind of continue this really nice and productive season that he's had in the role that he's been playing. And I was curious to see how he was going to play without Nico Mirotic there and see if that was going to continue. But a really nice night, a career night for Bobby Portis with 38 points, 15 for 26 from the field, 6 of 9 from three-pointer. He had 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and he played really well. He was plus 13 in the box score. Somebody else we have to shout out to right away off the bat is David Nwaba for this game. He was 9 for 14. He had a career high of 21 points, 9 rebounds, played really well in this game. Although he did fall out, had a really nice performance as well. But Bobby Portis has been stringing together games of consistently 15 to 20 points a night, grabbing you anywhere between 6 and 8 rebounds a night. And he's making a case for himself as a legitimate role player on this team. And I think it's funny that Fred is stuck with him throughout this season, even with Nico leaving and Lowry missing some time, that he's consistently stuck with him, keeping him off the bench. And I think that's where Bobby Portis is really thriving. So I give props to Fred Hoiberg as well to keep Bobby Portis in a situation that has been good for him all season.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned that it's been a nice string of games. Obviously, the 38-point outburst last Thursday against Philly was the highlighter there, but he's on a career-high streak right now. His last 9 games, he has hit at least 10 points or more. So that dates back to February 3rd against the Clippers. So actually, every single game in the month of February the Bulls have played, which is 9 games, Portis has hit double-digit points off the bench. So he's clearly playing with a renewed sense of confidence. Watching that Brooklyn game last night, which, oh dear God, we can get to that in a second. That was some ugly friggin' basketball. I'm still concerned about the development or lack thereof of Bobby on the defensive end. He seems lost an awful lot. I mean, if he's trying to hold his ground one-on-one, if he's being backed down or even going out and trying to defend around the perimeter, one-on-one, he's not terrible. But similarly to the problems I've seen with Zach LaVine on the defensive end since LaVine's come on board, it's the communication and switches and pick-and-roll situations and when does he rotate, when does he help, when does he not. A lot of those things I was watching in that Brooklyn game last night and thinking, wow, like, you love to see the confidence and the more dominant putting his foot down and being aggressive on the offensive end from Bobby, but defensively, he's still got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I said, I would say I saw flashes in the 76ers game. Could have been because of his high offensive night against the 76ers. And even against the Timberwolves, he wasn't playing too bad. On some of the switches where he knew where he was going, what he had to do when he was defending, he was fine. And I thought what was particularly interesting about him in the 76ers game was his ability to guard the perimeter. And I thought that when he knows the spots he needs to be in, him being able to guard the perimeter is huge for a big guy like that. And you like to see that kind of movement, but I know what you're saying here with his game of being kind of lost at times. And when they do make switches, sometimes he has no idea where he's supposed to be. It's going to come, I feel like, with Portis and trying to get acclimated to playing with some of these guys in this second unit. And obviously, he's been playing with a ton of different guys, a ton of different lineups. So you can see that too. And it's all part of the development. You're going to see like games like he had in Brooklyn, and you're going to see games like he had against 76ers. So I'm hoping there's some kind of happy medium we can come to. But since we're on this topic, talking about this player, I was interested just looking at Bobby Portis's season as a whole. So I ran through this metric through NBAstats.com. There is 11 players in basketball right now averaging 13 points, 6 rebounds, playing an average of 20 minutes, shooting 47% or above, and at least 34% from three. The company that Bobby Portis is in with those stats in mind is actually pretty good. And I was shocked by these names. So I'm going to list them off for you, Matt. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, DeMarcus Cousins, Karl-Anthony Towns, Nikola Vukovic, Nikola Jokic, Zach Randolph, Otto Porter Jr., Hassan Whiteside, Miles Turner, Serge Ibaka, and then Bobby Portis. So pretty damn good company for Bobby Portis with that stat line.
The first half of that list, I mean, that's an impressive list overall, but the first, I mean, you're talking about some of the most dominant forwards in the game with the first half of that list.
So if you want to talk about specifically just offensively what Bobby Portis has brought to the table this year and the development that he has with his offensive game, I feel like it doesn't get enough coverage. Like I just named all of that, like a guy that can shoot over 34% from three. He's shooting at a clip of over 47%, which Bobby Portis is. He's averaging 13 points and 6 rebounds in a game. Like to be in a company with any of those names just off the bat, like we had said, and Bobby Portis is only 23 years old, pretty damn good company for an offensive player. Obviously some defensive things to clean up on Bobby Portis's end, and hopefully with a little bit more time, he gets bigger, stronger, understands the defensive end and what Fred Hoiberg's trying to do. But I do love him coming off the bench with some of these guys, and I think he's only making guys better too as well. So it was interesting him coming off of playing so well with Nico, and then the absence of Nico, it looks like he hasn't really hit a speed bump or any type of obstacle that would hurt him in any of that way.
Yeah, definitely. All right, do you want to talk about the game against Minnesota real quick? The revenge game, rematch game, whatever you want to call it, part two, after the Bulls surprised the Wolves and got that win at the United Center a couple weeks ago. No Jimmy Butler in this one. Obviously, that's one of the big stories in the NBA right now. He has a tear in his meniscus, just had surgery to repair it. The Wolves are hoping, and Butler sounds confident, that he'll be able to get back before their playoff run if they can at least hold down a playoff spot in that very competitive Western Conference. But even without Butler, the Wolves and Tibbs managed to win this one and win it fairly easily, running away really in the fourth quarter. I mean, the Bulls trailed Minnesota by, I think, 6 or 7 after one. Then the Bulls had a really strong second quarter in that game, actually outscored Minnesota in that and held a 2-point lead at halftime. But then we're outscored 36-22 in the final period. The defense just absolutely collapsing in that fourth quarter as the Wolves win running away. I mean, you look at the box score in this one, even without Butler, they got 23 from Wiggins, 22-13 from Towns. Jeff Teague, their starting point guard, 25, and Taj Gibson, also a double-double with 19-10. You know, look across big minutes from everybody in that starting lineup, classic Tibbs form, 36, 33, 35, 38, 34 for his 5 starters. As for the Bulls, this was the second straight game where Markkanen hit only 1 field goal and scored 3 points, 1 of 8 on the night. And another rough one for Cristiano Felice. Actually, I mean, of these games that Felicio has been inserted into the starting lineup, this has probably been his best one against Minnesota, 11 points, and was only a minus 11 in 31 minutes. So there's that.
I guess. I mean, the one thing I had was like Chris Dunn didn't obviously have a very good game against the Timberwolves.
He was coming like back out of 12.
I don't know if he was trying to press too much, but not only that, but then he let Jeff Teague cook him. Jeff Teague went 8 for 17. He had 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists in this game, 2 steals and 1 block. Jeff Teague only turned the ball over 2 times in this one, too. Jamal Crawford had a really nice game off the bench as well. Kind of put the dagger in the Bulls, being able to drop in 5 of 8 from 3-pointer, 6 of 11 overall, and he had 19 points and 3 assists in this. So on top of that, Andrew Wiggins had a really nice night shooting. When you let a team shoot nearly 50% from the field, and even the Bulls didn't do a bad job of shooting. They shot 46% in this game, but obviously the defensive lacking. And I mean, you look at the Bulls roster right now, you're going to kind of expect that, especially on a road game. So I'm not too surprised by this. Obviously, it's disappointing, the news about Jimmy Butler. When I saw that go down, and obviously we want to spend that majority of that conversation with Chris Bleck. So that's why you're not going to hear us talk about it too much right now. But just when I saw that go down and him fall straight to the ground on a non-contact injury, you knew there was bad things coming.
Yeah, non-contact is always a bad sign when they go down like that. And I mean, just knowing Jimmy Butler, I would be shocked if he's not back on the court and playing, and maybe even before the playoffs start. I think they'd ideally try to get him in there and get him a few regular season games under his belt, which, you know, based on the window, the timeline that they have in front of them, is definitely possible for him to get at least a couple of regular season games in before the playoffs start, kind of similarly to what Tibbs did with D. Rose before the 2015 playoffs started. Because remember, D. Rose had that additional meniscus tear right around this time. I think it was actually like this week, February 24th or 25th, when D. Rose had that meniscus tear, and everybody thought, oh crap, here goes again. And Rose just took some time off to kind of rest and rehab that meniscus and came back with a few regular season games to go before the playoffs. So I'm guessing that's what the Wolves will do here with Butler. And knowing his competitiveness, you better believe if the Wolves can hang on to a playoff spot, he will be out there.
That's going to be a big question with Jimmy Butler, is whether or not, did you say did it come out that he got it repaired, or did he get it completely taken out?
I think it was just a minor tear. And so I think they are just like shaving off like the part that was partially torn or something like that, that, you know, cause that's one of the options that they can do. They can remove it entirely and I think it's there's like two options as far as timeline of recovery. And if I think it's like the full removal takes longer to heal, as opposed to if they just shave off a piece of it.
See, I thought it was the other way around.
I might have that flipped around, actually.
Because I thought it was the Dwayne Wade scenario, where when it happened to Dwayne Wade, obviously he wanted to come back quicker, but at the same time, it was going to shorten his career. That was a decision. I don't know if Butler had the ability to make that decision right off the bat. But I thought if they were going to try and let it heal, if it was only a partial tear, that recovery took longer than actually just removing it. But it actually removes
NBA career. You're right about that. And, that's what I also remember, is that if you just remove it entirely, it could very likely shorten your career because the knee will give out sooner. I'm not sure if Jimmy was presented with an option there. Or if they just said, here's what happened and here's what we're going to do. Regardless, you have to take it as good news if you're a T-Wolves fan, because it wasn't an ACL and it looks like he'll be back this season.
So with that, I quickly just want to wrap this up by talking about some of the guys that have been getting some run. Obviously, we talked about Cristiano Felicio, but I want to talk to you about Noah Vonleh and Cameron Payne. So these guys have gotten three games to get some run. Cameron Payne obviously getting a little bit more run than Noah Vonleh has been. Noah Vonleh averaging about 15 minutes a night over these three games. He's been really good on the boards, and that's one of the biggest things that we heard when we were talking to people that were close to the Portland Trail Blazers. And something that was a strength of Noah Vonleh's was being a really good defensive rebounder. So I would like to see the offensive side of Noah Vonleh come back, because I saw that a lot when he played in college. I don't know if it's just a matter of he's not getting enough touches to shoot and see what he can do on the offensive end. But when he has had the ball in his hand, he's been putting it in the basket. So like against the 76ers, he was 1 for 2. T-Wolves, he was 3 for 4. And then against the Nets, he was 2 for 5. But in each of these stretches, in 15 minutes, he's averaging about 7 rebounds per game. So pretty good note on Noah Vonleh. What was your takeaway from what you saw of Cameron Payne?
Yeah, Campaign had a rough one last night. He even, like, when Brooklyn was just running out the clock at the end of the game, he stole the ball and chucked up a three from, like, half court that bricked and didn't even come close. So it was like, dude, were you trying to salvage your game by, like, hitting a pointless three-pointer at the buzzer? He almost went 0 for. He did get one field goal very late in this game against Brooklyn. He finished 1 for 10 with 2 points in 18 minutes. He did grab 5 rebounds and dish out 2 assists. His best game thus far came against Minnesota when he was 5 for 9 with 11 points in 19 minutes. Philly, 3 for 9 for 7 points in 20 minutes. So it's been more bad than good, obviously, from Campaign. In that loss to Philly, that close loss, he was actually a plus 17. Most everybody on that Bulls bench were in the high positives in that close one that the Bulls ended up losing by 1, and it was the Bulls starters that were dominated in that game. So Campaign, with the other reserves, played well around him in that loss to Philly over the weekend. But I mean, it's a small sample size, and it's just the same kind of thing with the small sample size we saw from Campaign last season when he got thrown into Fred's rotation when the Bulls were still trying to, you know, make a playoff run, grab a playoff spot, and he only lasted 10 games or so before Hoiberg gave him the yank. So we're not expecting that to happen. We're expecting Campaign, especially considering that they did pick up his option for next season, to be getting these significant backup point guard minutes for the rest of the season, regardless of how he performs. So it will be a larger sample size than what we got last season. But with the small sample size thus far, I have no confidence in him as even a backup point guard in this league. There's not enough offensive diversity and creativity to his game. And he's a hole on the defensive end. I don't see it. I mean, he's great for the tank. He's absolutely wonderful for the tank. And I know you mentioned, hey, maybe there'll be a pleasant surprise and all of a sudden Campaign's going to come in and show people he can play. No, I'm sorry. I'm not happening.
Yeah, that ship has sailed pretty quickly for me. I mean, he hasn't been terrible. I mean, for what we're talking about in Cameron Payne, the 1 for 10 against the Nets, not too good. He had a pretty decent game against the 76ers in his first game. He's got, I guess, whatever you would call it, in Zach LaVine's backing to the media. He thinks he's going to be, maybe could potentially surprise people. I just don't see it. Like you said, he's good for the tank, but that's probably about as much as I have to say about him. We'll see. I don't know. The last 22 games we've got here, we'll see what goes on, but he's going to be here next year as well. I can't let this slide, though. I know I said this would be the last thing, but I can't let this slide. Lauri Markkanen not finishing over Jared Allen and then just getting absolutely coffined by Jared Allen on the opposite end. What did you think about that?
I mean, when I saw, I've always been a fan of Jared Allen. Like, I liked him as a potential pick for the Bulls when the Bulls were, before they made the Butler trade and were going to be picking at 16. I thought, hey, Jared Allen's a guy that might be there at 16. And I think he's got a lot of upside as an NBA center. So I like what I've seen from him in Brooklyn thus far this season. That posterization was, who am I? I mean, he took off from a good distance away from the hoop and just tomahawked the crap out of that. And you would have liked to see Lowry try to go up and contest, because that's what Jared Allen did on the other end when Lowry tried to get him back. Jared Allen was right there, and he said, no, I'm not going to let you have that. You know, I think Lowry was kind of trying to get in front of that restricted area semicircle and take the charge from Allen, but he didn't. His heels were definitely on the inside of that restricted area, and he just collapsed. It's one of those, like, trying to take a charge, and instead you just get embarrassed. I mean, that dunk was ferocious.
Yeah, man, You're putting up a lot nicer things that I was saying after I saw the reaction to that dunk. Man, Lauri Markkanen, he'll learn this pretty quickly, but on that, man, just sidestep. Don't become a social media sensation.
That's cowardly.
The best players in this league
do not. That's worse than trying to take a charge.
No, the best players in this league know to, you know what, let's just let it go. Instead of it's one play, let's let it go. Let's not be a social media sensation for the next 48 hours. Because
Cowards. That's what you're talking about right now. Don't say the best players in the league. Say the cowards in the league.
You're asking me whether or not I'd like my young rising star in Lauri Markkanen to whether or not he should be on the opposite end of a ferocious dunk. I'm going to say I'd be all right with him sidestepping that on that one because Jared Allen.
Who cares about the 15 hours of social media trending of everybody saying, oh man, look, Jared Allen just posterized Lauri Markkanen, two of NBA's big rookies going at it. Cool, fun, wonderful. And yes, again, restating, I would have preferred Markkanen tried to contest the shot. I mean, contesting the shot is best case scenario. Trying to take a charge and failing, not as great. Sidestepping like a coward? Come on, Jordan.
He's still getting a face full of basketball if he even tries to contest that shot. Let's be honest.
At least he can look himself in the mirror after that game.
Hey, he could look himself in the mirror if he would have sidestepped that and realized he wouldn't have been in social media and sensation for 48 hours. But I digress. He's still...
Coward's way out. Coward's way out, Jordan. I thought more of you. Come on now.
Hey, man, this isn't the NCAA tournament where you're trying to get a bid and like every play of every game matters. Like, Lowry will learn that. I mean, come on, dude. We don't need you being posterized. This is Bulls team's trying to tank. Jared Allen is nasty. I liked him a lot. I'm surprised he slid to the 22nd pick to the Brooklyn Nets. If the Bulls would have kept that pick at 16, he would have been a sweet option. Like I said, he has probably one of the best dunks I've seen in college against West Virginia when he was at Texas last year.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's probably one of the best dunks I've seen in college basketball in about 10 years because I say it all the time, but the guy put his arm like maybe 2 feet over the basket before he dunked it. And it was kind of like a murderous dunk like this one was against Lowry. But I mean, the guy's known for it. So he's a great player. I like watching him a lot. I wish he was in a Bulls uniform, but yeah, next time maybe you just decide to sidestep that one and get out of Jared Allen's way.
All right. Well, maybe sometime you and I could play a game of pickup and we'll see if there's any sidestepping going on.
Oh, you know there is, dude. I'm not even 6 foot. You would have me clamped all day, every day. All right, let's finish up real fast here and get to this week in Bulls history. Matt, kick us off with some of the games that you have. I've got a couple on deck. If we can get to all of them, I will. Otherwise, I've got two memorable ones, but kick us off here.
All right. I'm going to start with a epic MJ versus Dominique battle of the 92-93 season. This came on February 27th, 1993. Entering this game, Michael Jordan and Dominique Wilkins were the two leading scorers in the league, and they did not disappoint the crowd in this one. This was at Old Chicago Stadium, I believe. Yes, this was a Bulls home game. Dominique went off for 38 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, and MJ flirted a lot with a triple-double, 34 points, 9 boards, 8 assists in this one. But an interesting little side note, and I got some of his highlights in that clip we put up on our Twitter feed at Locked On Bulls. Trent Tucker, a name that Bulls fans probably don't remember all that well because he was a bench player, a role player on that third early 90s championship team, the three-peat team, and it was his final year in the NBA, a 9-season NBA career, spent most of it with the Knicks through the 80s, 1 season with the Spurs in 91-92, and then came on board in Chicago for the 92-93 season. And Trent Tucker went off in this game off the bench, 24 points, get this, on perfect 6 of 6 from downtown and dished out 5 assists. That's some badass stuff as a bench player.
Unreal. Absolutely.
In 22
unreal.
Minutes, 24 on 6 of 6 from deep and 5 assists in 22 minutes.
Man, absolutely unreal. All right, I'm going to go to Saturday, February 27, 2010. I talked about a game last week in a week prior to this. It was an overtime win against the Portland Trailblazers, but I had to bring back this specific team because of the losing streak that started here. And this game was the significance to that. So the Bulls were headed to Indianapolis, played the Pacers. They lost 100-90 in this game. This was one of those Pacers teams that was at the time 18 games under 500. It had a young Danny Granger. It had Roy Hibbert on there, as well as Mike Dunleavy, some names that you can probably remember. Funny thing is actually Earl Watson was on this team at that time. And obviously Earl Watson out without a job now. But in this game, what was interesting about it is the Bulls squandered a lead that they had going into the fourth quarter in a game in which Luol Deng, Derrick Rose, and Taj Gibson were the big players in this one. Derrick Rose with 27 points. He had 4 assists and 2 rebounds. Luol Deng had 13 points and 18 rebounds in this game.
Ooh, bunch of boards for Lou.
It was not enough to beat the Pacers on the road. And this was interesting because this ended up being almost a month stretch of the Bulls losing games. They lost 10 in a row and just squeaked into the playoffs. They ended up losing in the first round to Cleveland. But this was an important game, and I think this was one of the tipping points for Vinny Del Negro as he exited after this year. And also a reminder, this is a reminder that March is the month that we had the John Paxson and Vinny Del Negro choking incident go on shortly after this season ended. But a 10-game losing streak in this season. This was the start of what we remember as the Joakim Derrick sort of days. But fond memories of this week.
The choking incident. I love that the Bulls have one of those in their long storied history.
Multiple. Well, I guess a choking and a punching incident.
Yeah, exactly. Would have made Latrell Sprewell proud. All right, I got another one. This will be a fan favorite. This came in the 2012-2013 season when, of course, the underdog Bulls, or under Bulls, or whatever you want to call them, were playing without D. Rose, who was on the shelf all season with that torn ACL. The third triple-double of Joakim Noah's career comes on February 28, 2013 at the United Center. Joe's box score in this game is stupid awesome. 23 points on 8 of 12 shooting, 7-for-9 from the free throw line, which is great for Joakim. 13 rebounds on the defensive end, 8 rebounds on the offensive end for a combined 21 total rebounds, dished out an assist, grabbed 3 steals. Oh, and by the way, he completed the triple double with 11 blocks. 11 blocks. That is
unbelievable.
I mean, I can still remember watching this game the night that it happened. Wow, 5 years ago now. Another one of those scrappy wins. The Bulls did beat Philly in this one. 93-82 was the final score. And you had, you know, nice contributions from the other role players. Boozer actually had a big night, 21-12. Kirk Heinrich had 15 and 6 dimes. Luol, 12 and 4 dimes. Nate Robinson chipped in off the bench with 9 and 3. The scrappy Bulls, man, without D. Rose, but how about that stat line from Joakim? This was like, so the 2012-2013 season, and then going into 2013-14, when Joakim was Defensive Player of the Year, legit MVP candidate, a guy that Tibbs just ran his offense through on large percentages of these games, so playing sort of like a point center hybrid that the NBA hadn't seen much of up to that point. And, wow, you just forget how good Joakim was when he was prime Joakim.
I saw a lot of reports, too, if they were able to get a buyout done with Joakim Noah, which I doubt is going to happen with the Knicks, then maybe he would be the piece that some of these other teams that are competing for playoff spots currently would like him at the back end of their bench, if not for anything but his leadership, and just kind of solidify a bench back there. And I don't know if he can... You know, he can hang around for 10 or 15 minutes if that's what they need him to do, and he can bang bodies. But it'd be kind of cool to see him if the Knicks will agree to something, that maybe he does join one of these teams, whether it's Oklahoma City or the Timberwolves. But yeah, certainly those were fun times. I love a good big man in basketball. If you can bang bodies down low, kind of a gritty player like Joakim was, kind of got on. He was an irritant in the way that I feel like kind of Bobby Portis is an irritant to guys, in the way that where he didn't care. It didn't matter. And so I would love to see him join a bench on a competing team and get one last run in there, even if he is out there with a half a shoulder and one leg.
You know Tibbs would love him just as a guy to bring in off the bench, maybe for a few minutes as an energy guy. And even if not that, definitely just a leader guy.
Oh, without a doubt. Matt, I want to drop this real quick, but as we exit out of here, I want to drop this on you. So to go along with those stats, I got interested in, with the whole Bobby Portis thing and categorizing all these guys, I got interested to see where Zach LaVine stacked up against guys that are around his age and had similar stat lines. So what I plugged in was guys that are under 26 years old right now in the league and are currently averaging over 17.4 points per game on an average of 26 minutes per game, shooting over 40% and at 38% three-pointers. So there's actually only a handful of guys in the league that are doing this right now that are under 26 years old. Those guys include Devin Booker, Kyrie Irving, Kristaps Porzingis, CJ McCollum, Karl Anthony Towns, Tobias Harris, Evan Fournier, Zach LaVine, and Gary Harris. Obviously, Zach LaVine's only played in 16 games. These other guys have played a variety between 47 and 56 games. So, but it's obviously a small sample size, but another cool metric to kind of see where these guys stack up. And as far as age-wise, I threw that in there too, just to think about the young talent and get people to start thinking about this summer when the Bulls do commit a large sum of money to Zach LaVine, kind of what you're getting and where it stacks up in the NBA, at least offensively.
Yeah. I mean, those are some nice, interesting comparative names there. And I guess what we didn't mention when recapping these three most recent games is that LaVine did not participate in that Brooklyn game on Monday night because the Bulls deciding he still is not going to do back-to-backs. The Bulls playing again Tuesday night against Charlotte, and they decided to sit him for the first part of the back-to-back as opposed to the second. Hoiberg gave his, you know, quote-unquote reasoning or explanation behind that before the game, saying instead of getting one day's rest here and 3 days rest there, it's two and it's two, kind of more evenly balancing things out. We all know that's bogus, right? I mean, they saw this opportunity. They saw this game against Brooklyn as a, like, we're right on Brooklyn's heels in the tankathon. It would definitely help us out at the end of these, you know, 82 games, if we have a loss to Brooklyn here tonight, maybe we take Zach LaVine out and that happens. So I think that's why LaVine did not play on Monday night and will instead play in the second half of the back-to-back.
Yeah, and at least they're going along and staying with their word with the whole not playing back-to-backs. I'm okay with that too. Just, you know, we're obviously getting to see him play a large amount of minutes. You don't need to overload him, especially going into this tank. And like you said, it helps when you're playing teams that are kind of competing in the same realm for that top spot in the lottery this summer. So, all right, we're going to get out of here. But remember, there is part two this week. We're dropping another episode today. So make sure that you go and download that episode. It's going to be an interview with Chris Black. We'll have some fun things in there. We're going to talk about the NCAA scandal with him, Jimmy Butler's injury and how that impacts the NBA, and a ton of other things in that episode. So make sure you go download that. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Locked On Bulls, for Jordan and Matt, we are out. We'll see you in part two.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.